You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Guys, it's time for an advertisement. In fact, I will say that this sponsor, it's a new sponsor, Grubhub. You've got basically, if you're hungry, you can order, pick up from your favorite local restaurants, and you don't have to make a call. It's free to use. You can order online or through the Grubhub app, which you can have on your phone. And every order is supported by the company's 24/7 customer service teams. So, you know, if it gets screwed up, you actually have somebody you can call. So here's the good news. You can go to grubhub.com/BCS for Brian Callen Show. Use the code podcast and you get $5 off your first order on Grubhub if you spend over $10. But that's, you know, only if you're a first time user. So don't abuse it. Grubhub helps you find and order food from wherever you are. You just type in an address. Then they tell you the restaurants that deliver to the locale that you are in, as well as showing you droves of pickup restaurants near you. And there it is. You can search by cuisine, restaurant name, or menu item. And they filter the results accordingly. And when you find what you're looking for, you place your order online or by phone, free of charge. All right? And they give you access to reviews, coupons, special deals. And don't forget, a 24/7 customer service team that tracks each order and makes sure you get exactly what you want. So, once again, for $5 off, go to grubhub.com/BCS, enter the code podcast. And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening. Now let's get back to learning everything on the greatest podcast of all time, The Brian Callen Show. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Brian Callen Hunter Motz Show, where we bring you some of the greatest thinkers of all time. I just did a radio tour talking about this podcast, and I thank Hunter for this. You get such great authors. There are so many people that write these great books with no one to talk to because people don't read anymore. But I think Lindsay Davis is our guest, and she writes historical novels. And I said a while back that I think the best way to learn history is to read it in a historical novel. Some of the great historical novelists. One of my favorites is Leon Uris. But there are a number of them. And Lindsay Davis sets her stories in ancient Rome. So I can't wait to get into why ancient Rome. You've written, first of all, welcome, Milady Davis. And you have written how many books?
I've written 27, of which two are not quite yet published.
That's unbelievable. We're here to talk about Falco, which is her latest.
So, yeah, so 20 of those books are from the Falco series, right?
That's right. And two going on three are my spin-off, which is about his daughter.
Now, I've always been fascinated because I procrastinate. And I have to write, and I don't know how do you do it? What is your routine? How in the world are you able to churn out that many books? And they're high quality books.
How dire it would be to have a routine. I ran away from having a real job to be a writer because it's like being a perpetual student. You don't have to get up in the morning. You don't have to go to things if you don't want to. And so long as you turn in your thesis or your long essay on the due date, that's the only obligation. I work to deadline very well, which means I mess about for a lot of the year. And then towards the time when I have to do my book, I speed up and have no other life. And I think that makes them very concentrated.
Well, you know, and there's such detail, and especially, but like the aqueducts, you learn about these crazy things of ancient Rome. Why ancient Rome?
Well, because nobody would buy what I really wanted to write, which was the English Civil War of the 17th century. And there was a kettle of fish. In fact, I have now written both a very long book and a very short book set in that period. And people like them, but they still say, more Falco, more Falco. So what was attractive about that? I think certainly for anybody English, the fact that in Italy the sun is out is the prime consideration.
Yeah.
You think that fiction is to cheer people up and take them away from their drab, mundane own world, then to go to Italy or anywhere in the Mediterranean is a good start. We had the Romans. You didn't, but we did. And so we think they are partly our heritage as well. And I'm sure that helps. And then they are so like us in so many ways that that is attractive. And then there are other ways in which they are so strikingly different. Things like gladiating, things like slavery, which is the subject of my second Flavia Albia book, are so alien to us that we're interested despite ourselves, because we wonder how people who are so like us in other ways could possibly have had those things.
What have the Romans given us? Systems of law, things like that, institutions. I mean, what have they given us?
Law, politics, town planning, ethics, poetry, art. If it exists, they have given it to us.
Yes, but at the same time, the Roman Empire sort of had a slow decay in many ways, even though they were bursting at the seams with Greek philosophy, etc. That somehow, and in fact, some people have said that Christianity, you know, the Romans sort of, that wellspring of misery that the Romans created was the soil from which, you know, something like Christianity was born. I mean, this idea that, you know, it was very antithetical to the Roman ideals, wasn't it? I mean, the Roman used to, might makes right, have a strong body, don't, God forbid, you turn the other cheek, or you love thy enemy, etc., etc. The meek shall inherit the earth. That was all, those Christian sort of ideals were certainly very alien to the Roman mind, weren't they?
Yes. I'm sorry, my clock is chiming in the background. I hope you don't mind.
I think it's very fitting with a woman with your diction. I love it.
That's a good Westminster chime there. I think that there were many sides to the Roman Empire, and the mighty's right side was only partly true. There were many people living in the Roman world who were ordinary people with businesses, with quiet lives, and who probably were kind to their neighbours and their family. So it's too simple to say that Christianity and the Roman world were direct opposites.
Of course.
And isn't that also partly our thinking of the might makes right as being the dominant side of, you know, the Roman personality? That's also a historical artifact, because obviously what survives is the giant monuments, the triumphal arches, the swords. Oh,
yes, but not if you go to somewhere like Pompeii. Where there are monuments, but they're nowhere near as giant, which is a town that wasn't military at all, really. It's based on commerce, mm-hmm. bit of Roman religion, and people earning livings and leading very colorful lives.
Let's talk a little bit about Falco and what it is. I mean, you've written a book a year from yes. since 1989. I mean, think about that for a second. A book yes, a year. That's ridiculous.
It's too frightening for me to think about.
My God, that's amazing. I mean, that's a body, that's a real body of work. What do yes. you think it is about this series that has such resilience?
I think it's not formulaic. Every single book is slightly different. Mm-hmm. Although they're all detective stories, they're different kinds of detective stories. Sometimes they are adventure stories and he goes to other parts of the world. That is attractive. I also think that something I hadn't thought about has taken over, and that is that people are more interested in Falco's family and friends and the saga of his relationships than anything else. And so it's like a huge daily story.
Well, but where did the character come from? Did the character start writing itself after a while? Did the character... what was the blueprint for this character?
Well, he was deliberately created, and he was created to be a kind of 1940s gumshoe, but set 2,000 years ago for a joke. So right from the start, he was meant to be a funny character. Mm. And he had some attributes of a classic detective, primarily that he was always keen to fight for right, even when the establishment might try to stop him, as it does in the very first book. But also, if I was going to set him 2,000 years ago, I had to do that to some extent straight. He had to be a real Roman. And so he was immediately different from any other detectives in that he was striving to be a good Roman, although he was also mocking it at the same time. I wanted him to have certain attributes that classic detectives did. For instance, he lives in that terrible apartment at the start because he doesn't spend any money.
Yeah, exactly.
By
the way, I have to stop you because one of the things that's amazing about the books is that you're so good. It's such a feat because not only are you creating a detective story, which is already difficult, but the amount of research and detail in these, you know, in everything Roman. I mean, you are basically a Roman historian, it feels like.
I'm a Roman historian in a very narrow field. I know almost all there is to know about the AD 70s and going on now into the 80s, but I don't know as much at all about the rest.
I think you're being modest.
My focus is very narrow.
Right.
But I hope it's right. I can't see any point writing historical novels unless you make them authentic. I hate people who say, well, I've changed the date of the Battle of Borodino and who won it because it didn't fit my story. My idea is to find out as much as I can, to find out what happened and what it was like, and then write a story that fits that. And I do love the research. That, I think, is absolutely crucial to why the books work and are so popular.
How can you be sure that in the research you do, how can you be sure that that what you're writing about that happened 2,000 years ago, how accurate, how confident are you that the things that you write about are accurate?
They're right. Trust me. If I say they're right, even if I made them up.
I love it. It certainly feels that way.
And
that's how you write a good book. You have to be authoritative. This is me, the English lady, telling you. Just do what I did.
I know. I feel like I'm ready to do whatever you say.
And like it.
I promise you, you'll like it.
And just to interject in terms of how modest you are being, you know, you were elected as the honorary president of the Classical Society. Is that not correct?
That is true. In the UK, they are really nice people. Well, maybe they couldn't find anybody else that.
I love British modesty. Americans could learn so much from you, British.
And also, the other thing too was that you came and gave a talk at the Getty Villa. The Getty invited you out here to speak in the amphitheater at the Getty Villa. So, you know, you really know your stuff.
I hope I know my stuff. I went to a good school where I was taught to do things properly and to learn things properly and to enjoy it. And I hope what I do is of some validity. But I can never say I'm a classicist because I wasn't trained as a classicist. So I'm always a bit diffident.
What do you think the Romans had over us as modern people? I can tell you, as living in 2014, women's rights, there is no slavery, we have antibiotics, we have anesthesia. I mean, there are a lot of things to be thankful for, and the Romans didn't have any of that. Our ability to communicate over long distances, et cetera, and fly. What did they have? What do you think we've given up?
I think the most obvious answer is if you think about what's happening in Afghanistan and places like that, where the US and the UK have gone in as maybe not conquerors, but as imperialist powers, and have failed to make them good countries. Whereas the Romans, when they invaded, that yes, they were militarily brutal to start with, but once they got there, they valued the country for what it had, and they gave it a huge infrastructure, which to some extent still exists in the provinces of the Roman Empire, including the country where I live. And the people on the whole liked them being there and accepted them being there and thought that it was a benefit. You have occasional insurrections. We had a famous one under Queen Boudica, but she was sorely provoked. And once that had been sorted out, the Romans got on with making Britannia a wonderful place and everyone was happy. This is not happening in the modern world when we, the great powers, go into other places that are, to our minds, backward. We don't do that.
Yeah. Well, you know what I thought of reading the books is, why is this not a TV show? Why is this not a series on HBO? You've got to be kidding me.
Hopefully, there is a film option. which a script for it came today. That's all I can say. It takes a long time. And I'm determined that it will be done well. A very bad film was once made, and my readers blamed me for letting it happen.
Right. So, well, I mean, but I mean, we were at the golden age of TV. I mean, this is a TV series, a high quality TV series waiting to happen. This would, I mean, are you kidding me, Falco? I mean, there's nothing like this on TV.
Hopefully there will be.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to have to make some phone calls. I want to play the Roman. Did they really wear togas?
I beg your pardon, say
what again. What did the average Roman wear? Where did he get his clothing? What did it look like?
Everybody wore a tunic, basically. Togas existed, but everybody hated them, and only men wore them, or prostitutes among women. Well, everybody wore a simple tunic that was a rectangle. It's the most boring period to write about for a historical novelist because everyone's just in a square of material. There's no fanciness.
It sounds like a Saturday night at my house. I love it. I wish I could just throw on a piece of cloth. That'd be great. I just came back from Minnesota, though. I have to say, where you wouldn't want to see people. You want to make sure people are wearing a lot of clothing. They like their food in the Midwest.
Now, one of my best friends lives in Minnesota. It was her who taught me to Skype, so I will hear not a word about the place.
I understand. And you are now, as if all these books weren't enough and Falco wasn't enough, you are now writing a spin-off.
Yes. Indeed. Really, because after 20 years of writing as a man, because the Falco novels are told in the first person, and I've had to be Falco for 20 years.
Right.
I was ready for a change, and it's really nice to be a woman for a change in the Albia series.
Well, do you find that women or men, who reads your books more? Do you have...
Yeah, I know the answer to this because once I asked through the wonderful medium of my website, I said, who are you? Fill in a chart and tell me. And there are women and men in more or less equal numbers. And that's certainly what I find if I do give talks. Both men and women come. Not very many very young people because I don't intentionally write for the young. And I think... although no young person would be harmed by reading one of my books, they are adult books. I found out only 2 weeks ago that my oldest reader that I know of is 101. He had his birthday.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing.
And he's still all there and was just sorry he couldn't go to a shop, so I had to send him a book. What more can anybody ask? And one of the things I'm very proud of, Hunter, you have told me about this too, is that families read them. Parents will pass them to their children. Children will pass them to their parents. Uncles and aunts get drawn in, sisters and brothers. I think that's not true of every novelist. So I am proud of it.
Do you know what's funny? As I literally said to my wife, I said, you would love these books. Yes. There's no question.
And people feel able to pass them on, which is really nice.
Well, would it be safe to say that Agatha Christie is one of your influences/heroes, or who do you look up to as novelists?
I'm not a very big Agatha Christie fan, I have to say.
I knew that was a loaded question. That's why I threw it out there.
She writes differently.
Yes. She writes differently. I knew that you took my bait. Oh my God. I love it. I was like, I'm going to throw out the Agatha Christie. I bet she's going to come back at me.
I don't like talking about other authors I read because people instinctively then think that I model myself on them. And I think what's special about my books is that they are mine. They have my voice, my interests, and they're by design, they are original. So,
yes, they are. Yes,
they are.
Any
more out of me than that.
Yes, they are. Is it a surprise? First of all, though, to write about a gumshoe, to write about a detective, what is your experience with police work?
Who needs experience if you have an imagination?
God bless you. Exactly.
Absolutely none. I've occasionally met a policeman, but never in the course of me committing a crime. It would just be socially. I have never seen a dead body.
Yeah.
They say write about what you know, but I've been writing now for over 25 years with success, so I think I've proved that that's not true.
Well, you've done a lot of research, so they also say know about what you write. So you, if you don't know about it, you better research it, right?
Yes. It's easier to some extent with the Romans because they didn't have the same kind of police force that we have, although I've tried to write pseudo police procedurals involving the vigiles, their night watch. And they didn't have guns, which is one thing I'm very grateful for. I don't have to learn ballistics and get that wrong probably. And they didn't have the same kind of forensic detective work that we do now. It's you have a look, you see who would be likely, and then you beat them up until they own up, as Falco's friend Petronius said. It's all much, much simpler. But by the same token, Falco and Albia now have to use their intelligence to a great extent, and to have an instinct for what human beings would do that perhaps, I won't say, policemen don't have to have, but it's different.
Well, it's much more about the understanding of human psychology than it is about the understanding of forensics.
Indeed it is. Yeah.
What was the weapon? What weapon did policemen carry?
The vigiles were unarmed. Can you believe it?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I think they had big sticks, even if they were supposed to be unarmed.
Mm. Well, it just seems a knife and a sword is such a final weapon. It's one thing to point a gun at somebody. When you draw a knife or a sword, that is such a clinical... You can kill... The difference is, with a gun, you can kill at a distance. With a knife or a sword, you smell the person. Yeah.
Yes, you do. You have to be almost touching them, and possibly you are touching them.
Yeah. A very, very different way to live, and a very, very different way to... different mindset, I would imagine. You know, the wars that the Romans waged... That was, sure, they used archers and things, but you got up close and personal at the end of the day, you know?
The reason they were so successful as soldiers is they used their swords and their feet. That's the thing that always strikes me. They stamped a lot when they were being soldiers to a very personal degree. There is a scene at the very end of the 20th Falco novel where Falco and his best friend deal with someone who is of criminal nature and whom the establishment have failed to deal with, and they kill him. Mm. And readers have been horrified by that, but I think in the Roman world it would have happened.
Are you, as an author who deals with these kinds of things, do you find yourself in favor of things like capital punishment? Would you legalize drugs? What is your take on the law?
My take on capital punishment is that because so many mistakes were made, I think it's a very dangerous thing to have. But then the really worst crimes, of murder, aggravated murder and rape also, are so horrible that it does make you humanly think those people are not fit to live. Drugs, I think that's a difficult area, because if you like a drink, even if you drink carefully and socially, how can you say that other sorts of drugs shouldn't be allowed? It's like saying what I do is okay, what other people do isn't.
I agree.
It's very difficult to legislate on that. But the damage that is being done by drugs, by drink, by cigarettes, which you haven't mentioned, to society and to individual human beings and the people they leave behind when they die, is so big that I think we need to reconsider it.
Why in the world do you think the Roman Empire, why did it decay from the inside out? I mean, you touch on this in the book, you know.
It was time. They lasted for 700 years, after all.
Yes, I was going to say, they had a good run.
Indeed.
Yeah, they had a really good run. All right, guys, guess what? I have to interrupt because I am going to do an advertisement. We'll get right back to the show. I just have to talk about DraftKings.com. Fantasy baseball fans, on opening day, DraftKings.com awarded over $500,000 in cash prizes. See, it's one thing to play a game. It's another thing to play for cash. It's a lot more exciting, I think. All right? Now, you got to check out DraftKings.com. Okay, it's the one-day fantasy sports site, all right? And it is a fact that the listeners have won hundreds, thousands, even $1 million, not my listeners, but listeners in general, with DraftKings, okay? You watch sports and play fantasy, okay? This guy named Sam, I don't know anything else about him, he won $100,000, apparently, his first time ever playing. So there is real money to be won. So here's the bottom line. Right now, you can play for free. You can win real cash. Enter Callen, C-A-L-L-E-N, today at DraftKings.com and get free entry into another huge contest. And they are awarding over $400,000 in cash prizes. $400,000. All right? It's what I make like a week. So that's a lot of money, guys. All right. Well, listen. Enter Callen now at DraftKings.com. All right? You get to play for free and win real cash. What more do you want from me? Oh, I know. The podcast. Let's get back to it, shall we?
May we all hope for a run that good.
I know you forget about that, but you know that's right. They left quite the legacy.
They did.
Why ancient Rome and not Greece?
Because of the position of women.
Mm.
It comes down to this simple fact: in Greece, a wife had to stay at home when her husband went out to dinner. In Rome, she went with him. So although legally the status of women in Rome was not ideal, I would say, the balance is so different. I could never write about a society where the women were all penned in women's quarters and couldn't go out.
Yeah.
In whom there are problems, and in the Albia books, I'm addressing her problems as a woman trying to run a business and to go about society. But still, there was equality. And I love the Roman definition of marriage, which just was that two people agreed to live together. That's it.
That's the greatest definition.
That is, isn't it? Yeah, you don't have to have a contract. You don't have to have formalities unless you need them for reasons of money as much as anything, or children. And then when they decide that one decides that they don't want to be in that marriage, it's over. Mm-hmm. So no mucking about. And I think that's just wonderful.
When you read your books, you get a sense of even the smell of the street.
Yes, I'm supposed to be good on smells.
Yes.
I'm quite proud of that.
What would I smell if I walked down the average Roman street?
Oh, you wouldn't like it.
Right. Sewage.
Well, sewage, to some extent, though of course their sewers were wonderfully efficient, but the thing that would strike you most would be donkey dung, I think.
Yeah.
Well, everywhere, and dog dirt. And general rubbish, although they cleared away rubbish to some extent. And in a hot country, all of those smells would be worse.
Well, there was no rubbish, really. There wasn't plastic. There wasn't paper. So what was the rubbish? It was mostly feces.
Every time anybody wanted any meat, all the offcuts would just be thrown in the road at any period of history, really. So there would be smells of meat and blood and fish and old vegetables.
Yeah. Well, by the way, let me tell you, I walked through Bangkok and some of those back streets.
Yeah, smelled that.
Yeah, I mean that smelled like garlic. The whole town smelled like garlic soup in the summertime.
It was. Yes, you would have that because they did have a lot of garlic. But
what was the average diet? What did they eat?
Well, they didn't eat the fancy food that is always shown at banquets, apart from the very limited top echelon. Most people ate what was fresh and available where they lived. We think that there were plenty of people who had a good diet. Soldiers certainly had a good diet. But if you lived in the country, which most people to some extent did because towns were so small, if you lived near the sea, you'd have a lot of fish. You'd just go out and get it for yourself. People probably ate more cereals than we do and more vegetables. So it was a good diet. Lots of olive oil, of course, the ideal medical diet. Olive oil, vegetables, plainly cooked meat because they didn't have fancy ovens the same. So they would grill food.
Did they have salt and pepper and things like that?
They had salt, yes. Rome began its life way back in antiquity as a place where salt was brought up the salt road from the sea.
What were the diseases they had to contend with?
To some extent, the diseases of poverty for the poor. But then they had arthritis. A lot of people who worked would have had quite bad bone malformation because of working and muscle wastage.
Really? Just because they started at such young ages?
They did start very young, yes, before their bones were formed. But this is a science that's only really starting to be explored as archaeologists take skeletons and study the bones and see what people died of. And some diseases don't show up, unfortunately, so we aren't sure.
Well, and, you know, can you tell our listeners a little bit about Falco's first apartment and where it was located?
Yes. Well, this started when I began to research ancient Rome, and I realized that most people, the cities especially, did not live in those huge villas with white columns that we tend to think of as being Roman houses. Most people lived in huge, rather horrible apartment blocks that are like apartment blocks anywhere in the modern world. Marshall, the poet, speaks about living on the sixth floor, where the tenant who lives in the attic, which is where Falco ended up living, is the most likely to fry if there's a fire because he won't hear the alarm and won't get out in time. Buildings were not very well built and they fell down. They had tiny little rooms and were generally very sordid and you wouldn't want to stay there. So Falco is given one of those to be his equivalent of Philip Marlowe's apartment in the Cahuenga building.
Well, and also it's located above.
It's above a laundry.
And how did they clean clothes in ancient Rome?
So I'm deliberately not answering that, am I?
She's a lady. She's a lady, after all.
No, I'm going to tell you. They use water to wash, and then they also used human urine because it has bleaching qualities. And in the age of the Emperor Vespasian, there was a famous tax that was on human pee, and people had pots outside laundries and other places. And there is a famous scene where Vespasian says to his son, holding up a coin, he says, "You shouldn't despise money because here is a coin." I can't remember exactly how it goes.
It's after, to do after 26 books,
taxing human pee.
But so, I mean, that's amazing. The thing. He's living in Rome in the summer above a giant pee pot.
Yes.
So,
but he did, because what did you do if you needed to go when you were in your apartment where there were no lavatories? You went in a bucket or a pot, hopefully. Men could, as Falco does, pee off the balcony, but that was very antisocial and you could be fined for it if people caught you. But basically, it was all collected up and it was kept in a huge vat at the base of your apartment. So every apartment must have stunk of pee.
I was going to say, yeah, that's the one thing. The smells in ancient Rome were
yes.
not the greatest.
So with smells. Come, young men. There was poetry and music.
Well, you know, as I was a young man in college, I remember we didn't do the dishes for 2 months, me and my two buddies, and we had things growing in our drain. My mother came. She couldn't believe it. She decided just to throw everything away and buy us new pans, and there were sprouts growing in my drain. So that's how guys live. It's not a problem for us.
That is true. And Falco, when we first meet him, is a single guy, so I'm afraid his habits are not as clean as they should be, except that his mother drops around, as yours did, and tidies up things so he doesn't have things growing in the drains.
Did you find yourself writing a man who you could find yourself being married to or just friends with? What was it?
friends with, yes. But I've always said he'd be a trial to be married to. I don't know how Helena Justina manages it, because you never know when he was going to come home.
Right. And
never know what beating up would have happened, yeah, and how bandaging you'd have to do when he falls in over the threshold.
What I know the Roman, I believe the Roman definition for justice is everything in its place. What drives Falco? What is it that the, what is the spine when you write a character this resilient and a character that people just keep wanting to come back to over and over again, which I think is the hardest thing in the world in fiction, and you've done it brilliantly. What is it that he really, what weight gets him up in the morning? Is it the idea that he wants justice for those that can no longer speak, etc.?
I think, yes. He wants equality. He wants the world to be fair.
Mm.
He is, therefore, a Republican in the old-fashioned sense. He wants everyone to have a vote in the society where they live. And if wrong has been done and it isn't being put right, then he will personally wade in because he thinks it's everyone's personal duty to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he knows the world is very unfair. So that part of his attraction is his cynical recognition that there is huge inequality in the world.
That's what I think is what I'm glad you described it that way, because I think that's why he's so resilient, why people love Falco. And also that feels to me like sort of a human need to see someone who holds that ideal. And lives that ideal, to see someone like that be successful at the end of every novel.
Don't you think that that's the crux of the detective genre as a whole?
I do. I really do. It taps into our inner moral and sense, and our sense of justice, our sense of fair play.
And when the villain is either not found or gets away with it, we are left unsatisfied.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's right. And that's probably what I think. That's as big that is the fantasy. The fantasy is, we know in real life bad people get ahead sometimes, bad people get away with it, and sometimes they die of old age, like someone like Pol Pot or even Stalin. But in it's always so satisfying at the end of a novel, especially something like yours, where not only have you learned so much about how people lived back then, and you're able to draw parallels with how we live today, because in fact they were very similar as human beings. But then to kind of get that final reward of that bastard got it, you know, he found him.
That's always good.
Yeah, I read all of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. I read all of the Sherlock Holmes as a boy, and I just remember how satisfying it always was when he would find the killer, and you know, at the end of the day.
I don't even think you have to have the feeling that he's so clever, only he could do it. There's just the unraveling of what has gone wrong, and the laying it out is satisfying in itself.
Well, he's so human. I mean, he's so flawed and human. That's what's great about the character. I mean, that's the other thing. So.
Well, and that's the funny thing about Sherlock Holmes is that, you know, clearly, I mean, that's actually interesting to ask as well.
I'm saying Falco. Sherlock Holmes is a bit of a Superman.
Well, he's a bit of a Superman, but the funny thing is that Conan Doyle got so sick of writing him that he gave Sherlock Holmes a drug problem, thinking, oh, now nobody will like him.
Yeah.
And instead it made everybody like him more, because finally the Superman had a flaw.
Yeah.
Yes. Indeed. I don't get on terribly well with Sherlock Holmes because he's not human to me. There are very few people who are really like that. And I prefer people that you feel you could meet them in the pub.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think that's the one thing. It's a lot of fun, but it is a little bit like reading like a comic book, you know, Batman or Superman. You know, it's very different than a character like Falco.
Yeah. And now Falco, on the face of it, is not a hero in that style. But in fact, I think he becomes a hero because he is ordinary and still does extraordinary things because he thinks it's right.
Funnily enough, he actually, now that you say that, he reminds me of Bruce Willis in Die Hard, you know?
But
yeah. Well, because he's a flawed guy he's having a human experience, and despite all of it, he's figuring his way through this crazy maze, which is ancient Rome, you know, and all the people. So,
that's the thing is that, you know, he really, I mean, Falco really gets the shit kicked out of him as the story progresses.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but it's his tenacity and the fact that he just won't quit. I mean, that's really his.
But that's also a female point of view, in my opinion. Like, men would write him. I would have written him with just a little more. He's just a little tougher, a little taller, and he can knock you out. It just, that's, guys like to punch their way out of a problem.
I think Falco could punch his way out of a problem. But one of the things I decided when I realized what a long series it was going to be was that he got to learn to dodge a fight. Because otherwise he'd be too beaten up to carry on.
That's right. That's exactly. That's the intelligence.
I was determined that if he was hurt, like in the first book he gets his leg broken, for example, he was going to carry the wounds for the rest of the series. And he was ending up with too many wounds.
Just at the end of it, he's just no arms, no legs, just being wheeled around. He's just a brain.
Yes, Falco in a wheelchair would just be so pathetic that I couldn't do that.
Exactly, exactly. What is it? So you're working on this spinoff now?
Yes, yes.
Tell us more about that.
Well, my editor moved to another publisher and I had to decide, was I going to take Falco as well? And I really was feeling I'd done as much as I could with Falco himself. So first I wrote a book that I thought I never would write, which is set in the reign of the Emperor Domitian, the paranoid tyrant. I loved doing it, in fact, because I found I was a paranoid tyrant, so I could write it.
Yes.
So having done that and having researched the reign of Domitian, which is mostly the AD 80s, where I'd not strayed before, that gave me a new background. Whereas in the Falco novels, we have good Emperor Vespasian and everything being set to rights. And there's a new, much darker background to start with. And I decided that my spin-off would be about Falco's adopted daughter, Albia, which meant that I had two further different things. First, it's from the viewpoint of a woman, which is different and refreshing for me. And also, Albia was found in Britain, so she's seeing all the Roman stuff as an outsider. And she can be satirical about it in a different way from Falco. Hmm. And that too has given us a new perspective. And people were very wary because they wanted Falco, but when they tried it, they thought, oh yes, she's good. It's okay.
Yeah. Was there as much sex in... Whenever you think of the Roman Empire, you think of orgies and grape eating. And, you know, there's some sex in your novels. But tell us a little bit about the things you had to contend with. Was syphilis around back then, et cetera, et cetera?
It's a disputed point. I once mentioned a syphilitic legate and got letters. But from time to time, archaeologists can't make up their mind, to be honest. Every now and then they say there was syphilis in the Roman Empire and then they say there wasn't. I cannot believe that a society that was so fundamentally military did not have venereal diseases. So
Because they were off in other lands having raping and...
Yeah. They're bound to come back with things, aren't they? Yeah. But I'm waiting to see until it's proved before I dwell on it too much.
Yeah.
Sex. I like sex. Or I used to. So all of my heroines are keen on sex, and of course my heroes are keen on sex because they're men, so that works nicely, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, indeed. And we couldn't have a novel like this without it. That's what I say. Which is why I asked you, who read these more, women or men? And it sounds like it's mixed.
It is mixed. It's mixed. And again, that's something I'm very proud of, because for a man to write about women and have women read them with the same joy that my male readers read mine, I think would be very rare indeed.
Yeah.
No offense meant, but
Well, that's what I wouldn't be surprised. That's what I was curious about. I'm not surprised at all that just as many men read as women. I would have thought women maybe tilt the scale a little bit.
They may do. I will concede that. What I always say is that the duty of a novelist is to be observant. And I know some men. I've known quite a lot of men. I've seen what they're like. So I can write about them. And it's just amazing that male authors don't do the same with their female characters, but they don't.
Yeah.
But in general, men don't do a very good job of understanding women.
Well, perhaps that's the problem.
That's because you're such a mystery. I can't figure it out.
Now, right? I write about men. Falco understands women, and most of my heroes are actually fairly good with women because they too are sympathetic and observant.
Yeah, but still, I still can't. I try to write women, and I just, you guys, listen, I have a son and a daughter. My son is so easy to figure out. He's just linear, hungry, angry, tired. I got it. My daughter, 15 different levels of emotion. She's just decides she's going to cry. One day she loves me, the next day she hates me. It's just all over the map. I can't keep up.
You have to write about that.
I do. You're right. You're right. That's actually, that's true. Just a whirlwind that I can't figure out. So. Well, we can't thank you enough, Lindsay Davis. This has been fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to getting into all your books. I'm excited. Really, really fantastic. It's such good reading, and it's like I said, if you want to learn about, and the Romans have given us so much, so that's why I think these books are so relevant. You know, I always talk about how important it is to read history. It gives you perspective, but in many ways, if you don't understand what the Roman Empire, at least in its broad strokes, you're going to have a tough time understanding how we came to be in many ways. And I think you've done an amazing job of, with these great stories and this incredible character, weaving that historical narrative in so seamlessly. And it's an education and a thrill and a ride. So I think it should be required reading for all students, and I'm gonna shout it at the top of the mountain, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, thank you, but I don't want it to be seen as educational material.
It's not. It's fun. It's fun. Yeah, it's entertainment. It's great. It's a blast. Keep doing what you do. I don't know how you do it, but you do it very, very well.
I don't know how I do it either. If only I knew, I could do more.
Yeah, please, a book a year. More is not you. You're doing your job. You are doing your job. I can't wait to see the spinoff. We'll have you back on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been really good fun. I can't believe that I'm doing an interview with Los Angeles. It's just amazing.
Yes, with huge, sometimes working actors. What can we say? We'll talk to you later. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye. Lindsay Davis, ladies and gentlemen. Lindsay Davis, fantastic. I could listen to her talk all day. I love that accent. She's wonderful.
Well, and I mean, you know, she describes herself as an English lady pensioner,
of course.
I think is so
I'm
funny.
I'm a lady pensioner.
I mean, when the clock started chiming in the background.
She's great. It was great. That's a Westminster clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was great. That was fantastic. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been the Brian Callen Hunter Mod Show. Only this podcast brings you a historical novelist who writes novels. Detective novels set in ancient Rome. There it is.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.